Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to FPC Radio Live. We have been off for the last week or so, and surprise, surprise, Aaron Rodgers is still a member of the Green Bay Packers. However, Odell Beckham Jr., a presumed teammate, future teammate of Aaron Rodgers, is not signing with the New York Jets, John. And this news came yesterday. Odell Beckham Jr. will be signing a one-year, $15 million, worth up to $18 million deal with the Baltimore Ravens. Now, obviously, the first thought is, okay, or at least in our minds, you know, the first thought is, how does this impact Aaron Rodgers? Now, personally, I don't think it really does, because the more I look at it, more and more to me, it looks like money spoke in this situation. And I don't think the Jets, and probably smartly so, were willing to go up to $18 million for Odell Beckham Jr. The Ravens were, and I think ultimately that's what won out, not necessarily who Aaron Rodgers is going to play with, because even signing with the Ravens, he has no idea who his quarterback ultimately is going to be.
Right. Obviously, Odell Beckham Jr. took the money that was offered to him by the Baltimore Ravens, as you said, $15 million guaranteed. That's pretty good for a guy who missed all of last year, had some knee injuries, is now 30-plus in terms of age, hasn't been overly productive the last few years. So he had to take that. Maybe it's an olive branch by the Ravens to try to lure Lamar Jackson back by saying, well, we got you an elite wide receiver. But again, a lot of this has to do with the financials of it as well. Let's not forget, once this Jets-Packers deal is done, the Jets are going to have to commit $59.5 million to Aaron Rodgers. So maybe $18 million is a little too pricey for a wide receiver. They signed Alan Lazard as a free agent. Garrett Wilson's an outstanding receiver. So, you know, the Jets will have to make do without Odell Beckham Jr. But, yeah, it was kind of a surprise because we were just all thinking he was going to go to the Jets. But, again, unless that deal is made and until a deal is made with Aaron Rodgers, some of these free agents are, you know, looking at their watch and saying, well, I've got to do something. Maybe the Ravens even said to Odell Beckham Jr., you know, take it or leave it. You know, either take it now or leave the room. And good amount of money for Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, and look, I don't blame him for taking it. I don't blame the Ravens for offering it, and I don't blame the Jets for not matching it because, like you said, I mean, their priority right now is Aaron Rodgers, as it should be, because they sign Odell Beckham Jr. and they still have Zach Wilson. Well, good luck. It doesn't really matter. You want to have that quarterback in place as opposed to the elite wide receiver in this situation. And really, I mean, you probably can't afford both. Certainly, at that price tag for Odell Beckham Jr., you would think, or you would have thought that if he were interested in going to the Jets, and by all accounts, he was taking meetings, and certainly that was a possibility, they would have had to get him at a relatively at a discount. You know what I mean? It, not necessarily a cheap deal, but certainly not at $18 million. So, you know, what does this mean for Lamar Jackson? I don't know. I mean, could this be a bit of a inclination where this relationship is heading? Maybe it's heading towards something positive, they just figure, well, if they're not going to have Lamar Jackson, you might as well put as many weapons around Tyler Huntley as you possibly can to hopefully stay competitive. Either way, I think this at least gives, like you said, the Ravens a little bit of a negotiating opportunity and say, hey, look, we added to this a wide receiver group. But ultimately, if Lamar Jackson doesn't, I mean, if he feels the way he's felt about the Ravens, like what he did in his Instagram post, I don't think a one-year deal with a 31-year-old wide receiver is going to change much. You know, like I don't think that's right. Going to swing the needle. And as good as Odell Beckham Jr. could be, like I said, I mean, he's a 31-year-old coming off another ACL injury. I don't know if that's something that's going to sit there and say, like, if you're Lamar Jackson, you're like, oh, okay, the Ravens are taking it seriously. Let me sign a long-term deal. Now, maybe this means he plays on the transition tag, the franchise tag this year, maybe. But even then, I mean, you're starting to really you're starting to really push the limits of banking on yourself because, well, you know, Lamar Jackson wants a long-term deal. He doesn't want to do one-year deals here and there. So a lot of possibilities still exist, but I don't know if this necessarily pushes Lamar Jackson one way or the other.
Yeah, the damage could be irreparable. The only way to resolve it is by giving Lamar Jackson a contract where, if not all, most of the money is guaranteed. I know we've heard from Lamar Jackson in whatever method he's communicating that maybe it doesn't have to be fully guaranteed. Again, I go back to him not having an agent being his first big mistake. I mean, you pay the agent 2-2.5%. They'll get you more money than you can get yourself, and then they just run interference for you with media, with other teams. You know, he can talk to other agents. Agents make deals with teams because they have other clients that may be on that team, all of that stuff. Without an agent, you know, he's kind of going into this thing all alone, which is commendable in some sense, but to save, what, 2-2.5% of a potential $200 million deal, it's, you know, $4 to $5 million. I mean, again, the agent will make more of that back in negotiations where it pays for itself. So it doesn't make much sense there. And again, we're now almost 2 weeks away from the draft. So you would think something's going to happen before that, right? Because we're going to have draft picks involved if Lamar Jackson does in fact go elsewhere. And also with the Packers and Jets, there's going to be some sort of draft capital going from Green Bay, rather from the Jets to Green Bay if that deal gets consummated.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think we all anticipated certainly the Aaron Rodgers deal to come down before or during the draft very early on. If it doesn't, then that's when we start to really wonder, well, is there a big issue? Because I think we're generally not concerned that the deal hasn't gone through yet. But there is, you know, that slight possibility that it's not going to get done. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and if it doesn't get done during the draft, then I think that slight possibility turns into a much bigger possibility, or at least a, you know, a higher percentage. And, you know, Lamar Jackson, I think, is still sort of a mystery. I mean, he's requested a trade. By all indications, he doesn't want to be in Baltimore anymore. And, you know, the Ravens, they have a little bit of the upper hand here in the sense that, you know, in reality, they can match any offer given to Lamar Jackson. They don't have to trade him if they want to match the offer. So, I mean, there is some leverage in that sense. But, you know, they really have to decide what they want to do. Do they want to, you know, shell out the money? Do they want to just try to do this for 1 year with Odell Beckham Jr. and see if they can capitalize and ride off into the sunset? I don't know. And that's something that eventually we'll get an answer for. I mean, we keep talking about getting these answers, and quite frankly, it's been a lot longer than I expected. But then again, it's just April, so it's not a huge deal. So we'll move on because, you know, I'm very eager to talk about this next thing, and that is the Boston Bruins, John. all season, it's been just a really pinch-me type of situation where it's like, okay, is this really happening with this Boston Bruins team? And last night, they secured win number 63, the most in NHL history, 100-plus year history of the league, and no team has ever won more than 62 games. The Boston Bruins have done that with two games to spare, which is pretty incredible to think about. And 50 goals wasn't enough for David Pastrnak. He's very quickly amassed a ton of goals in his last two dozen and a half games, to the point where he is now at 60 and still has two games to spare. So what really stood out to me, John, and this was mentioned during the TNT broadcast yesterday, the Bruins were not only the first team to win 63 games, they were the first team to even have a chance to win 63 games. As the Lightning finished their 2018-2019 season off winning their last two games to get to 62, and the Red Wings had to win their last four games in a row to get to 62. So not only have the Bruins surpassed that 62 mark, they have potentially a chance to win 65 games, which, again, it just speaks to what kind of season that they have had and continue to have. And you know, every Bruins fan across the country and world or wherever are hoping it continues for another couple months, because that would mean a very, very fun celebration in June. So, yeah, fun day yesterday. It's kind of silly at this point to watch them continue to win and win in any fashion and just kind of always never feel like they're going to lose a game. And it's fun to watch if you're a Bruins fan.
feels like they're playing all home games as well, right? Because people are chanting, "We want the cup," yeah, in Philadelphia last night, of all places. So it seems like they're getting great fan support wherever they go. Pastrnak gets his 60th goal of the season with a hat trick, which is, again, doing it in style. And since he signed his contract, he's just upped his level of play,
yeah,
which is great. Sometimes, you know, you sign a contract, you take a deep breath, and you take it easy a little bit. But Pastrnak's just continued on and you know, scoring. It feels like a goal a game for the last
weeks. I think it is actually a goal a game, if not slightly above, which is absurd.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
That's what Phil Esposito did back in 1971 when he set the Bruins record, actually NHL record at the time, with 76 goals, 76 assists as well. And he obliterated that record, because before Esposito scored 76, the NHL record had been 58, held by Bobby Hull. He just, you know, blew by it. And then, of course, Gretzky blew by everybody, you know, a decade later. But, yeah, now Esposito has four 60-goal seasons, and now Pastrnak is only the second Bruin to amass 60 goals. And I guess, from an understanding, the 23rd player in league history to get 60 goals in a given season. That's pretty amazing.
I think it's closer to the four. I think it's like 40s, closer to that. But still, okay. It's still remarkable because, like I mentioned before, I mean, this league has a very long, long history, over 100 years. And you know, for this Bruins team, and, you know, this is the first time that you had two, you know, this is what's incredible, John, and I know you're going to like this because I know Mario Lemieux is your guy. This is the first time that the NHL, along with Connor McDavid and David Pastrnak, obviously, they both scored over 60 goals. The last time that happened came in the early 90s, where Mario Lemieux and Jaromir Jagr scored over 60 goals. And you're starting to think, like, wow, that Penguins team that won back-to-back cups was just, I mean, it was filthy and obviously a dominant team of that era. But, no, look, I mean, overall, this Bruins team is incredible. I mean, they're getting great goaltending. They're getting consistent offense. I mean, more than consistent offense. Their defense has been incredible. Their power play has been okay. But at the end of the day, their penalty kill has been the best in the league since the start of the season. So it's really been a joy to watch. And again, with two games left, obviously the focus starts to shift towards the playoffs. However, they still have a chance, John, at 131 points to surpass the points record, which was infamously set by the 76 Canadiens team, who a lot of people, and you're not going to get too much argument from anyone, would consider the greatest team in NHL history. They have a chance to surpass that in their next game. If not their next game, they coincidentally get a chance to do that against Montreal. They're going to do it. I mean, they've won 12 of their last 13 games. They've won 5-6 in a row. They're 9-1 in their last 10. This team does not lose games, and when they do, they don't lose two in a row. So you got to figure, out of the last two games, they're going to win at least one of them, very likely two, quite possibly three somehow. I don't know if any team can win three games in two games, win three times in two games, this Bruins team could do it. But it, you know, the reality of it is they're going to break that points record. They're going to be clear of any sort of tie, and I hope this puts the rest, the very hopeful narrative that a lot of teams or people are pressing. Well, the Red Wings and the Lightning both lost, and, you know, they didn't make the Stanley Cup when they won 62 games. Well, guess what? The Bruins have won 63. And when the Canadiens won 60 and set the record, they won the Stanley Cup. So, you know what? I don't want to hear about those silly, what happened the last two times. Well, guess what? The Bruins are better than the Lightning from a few years ago. All right? I'm not going to sit here and talk about the Red Wings, because that was a different era of hockey, and, well, you know, they went on to win a couple of Stanley Cups after the fact, just like the Lightning. But I do know, or I do feel, that this Bruins team is better than that Lightning team a few years ago. And, you know, right now they've really just not had, at any point this season, a lull, a step back. I mean, they've had a game here and there where maybe you're like, oh, wow, you know, they got beat. And then guess what? They win 9 in a row. And you kind of forget about it, and that's kind of been the MO for this team. And look, I mean, it seems like every move that they've made both in the offseason, obviously bringing back Krejci, bringing it back Bergeron, but at the trade deadline, Dmitry Orlov, great addition. Tyler Bertuzzi, he looks like a guy that hopefully will stick around here for more than just this season. It's going to get a little bit complicated for the Bruins to make that happen, but it's everything has been a big swing and a home run for this team, and when they do have injuries and when they do have to mix it up, they're still creating gold. I mean, like I said before, you put that Pasternak, Zaka, Bertuzzi line together, and all of a sudden they look like they've been playing together for years, and that could potentially be an emergency line if necessary, something the Bruins have not had the last couple seasons. So, it's gonna be exciting to see how these next couple months play out for this team.
The amazing thing, too, is their recent losses have come against teams they're certainly not going to face in the playoffs, teams that aren't going to qualify for the playoffs, like Chicago and Detroit. You know, when they're met with a challenge of, okay, back-to-back games where you're playing Tampa and Carolina on a weekend, Tampa at home, Carolina on the road, and you go to Carolina and you leave some of your stars behind and you still win. Yeah. Right? And Carolina still playing for a lot, trying to win their division because New Jersey's been on their heels all season.
3-0 against New Jersey, too.
Yeah, that's the impressive thing, that they're blips have come against teams they're not going to face in the postseason. Kind of like the Celtics. The Celtics actually have the best record in the NBA against teams above 500. Their slip-ups have come against Orlando or Chicago or Houston even. So, yeah, both teams are similar in that sense. When they're at their best, I think they're the two best teams, their best team in the respective sports. We'll see what happens over the next 2 months. But, yeah, the Bruins, this thing has just been, like, can you top this? And then, like, every game, the answer is yes.
Yeah. And it's not surprising, you know, you just expect them to win at this point. And like I've been saying for a while now, this feels a lot like a 16-4, 16-5 type of run for this team, you know, and by all accounts, that might be an underestimation of what they can do because, well, they're just not losing at that pace right now. Like I said, I mean, they've won 12 of the last 13 games, John. It's mm-hmm. And this is not the first time it's happened. It's happening with somewhat regularity, maybe not 12 of 13, but 11 of 13, 10 of 13. And like right then and there, you're talking about a majority of what you're going to need to do to hoist that cup. So, it's interesting, but I do want to, shift real quick before we, let everyone go here and talk about the NBA because, you know, a couple months ago, big trade deadline, Kevin Durant goes, Kyrie Irving goes, we both talked about it, which is going to work out better. Well, the Suns pretty much don't lose when Kevin Durant's on the floor. Dallas, however, isn't even going to make the playoffs. And I don't know what you got from Kyrie Irving being sat along with some other key players in that must-win situation for Dallas a few nights ago. But this was predictably a mess. And look, I'm not saying it's 100% on Kyrie Irving. Because obviously, like, you know, his numbers kind of look good. And, you know, you can argue that, oh, you know, it's just... No, but at a certain point, John, when there's always kind of disaster following you wherever you go, you got to, at some point, you got to figure, like, okay, maybe Kyrie's the issue. And a lot, obviously, all of his former teams... or at least the fan bases seem to feel that he was in some part a reason why things didn't work out there. And surprise, surprise, it didn't work out in Dallas. So what do you make of these players sitting, the loss, and really the future for this franchise? Not just Kyrie, but, you know, Luka as well.
Yeah, this team made it to the Western Conference Finals last year, lost in 5 games to Golden State, but the future looked bright. You had Luka Doncic on your team. You still do, although there are reports that he may be asked to be traded in the offseason. You know, then you acquire Kyrie Irving, which we knew was going to be an odd fit because you could get two ball-dominant guards. Like, at the end of the game, it's like them looking at each other, deciding who's going to take over. That can be problematic from time to time, or at least that takes a while to work those issues out. It's just unfortunate. This is a problem the league has, and that's why they addressed it in negotiating the CBA, where now to be eligible for All-NBA or MVP or Defensive Player of the Year, you have to play a minimum of 65 games. I think that's going to help with load management. Dallas was still technically alive, and Kyrie sat. Again, this comes from management, not even from Coach Jason Kidd. And then Luka Doncic, ironically, on Slovenia night, played the first quarter, played a few minutes of the second quarter, then came off the court. He wasn't happy. So this is coming from ownership and management, and both players didn't seem to be thrilled about that because they were still technically alive to get into the play-in. Now, a lot of things would have had to happen. But, you know, if Houston's doing this or Orlando that already were eliminated from the playoffs a month ago, that's one thing because now you're trying to garner more ping pong balls for the draft lottery. But for Dallas to do this was, you know, problematic. And again, an issue the league is going to have to address. And look, it's easy to blame Kyrie. Kyrie's play has been okay in Dallas. I think he's been pretty well behaved. To me, it's been more disappointing the way Luka Doncic has handled this. He almost seems like a petulant child who, you know, was the superstar of his team, and then they brought in another superstar, and he doesn't know how to play with him. You know, it's really been a bad mark against Luka Doncic, who fell from MVP favorite early in the season to the point now where he may not even finish top five. But, yeah, I mean, what a mess in Dallas, because this is a team, again, that went to the Western Conference playoffs a year ago, had a bright future, probably still has a bright future because, you know, you still got two talented players there, but who knows what they're going to do. Kyrie's going to be a free agent, and do they address Luka Doncic's wishes, perhaps, to get traded this offseason? I mean, man, Mark Cuban maybe spend a little less time on Shark Tank and a little more time running your basketball team.
Yeah, it seems like that. And look, I mean, if Luka was pissed for not being able to finish the game and all that, that's not going to bode well for his, you know, future, you know, when he's having that process of thinking, well, do I want to get traded? And he's going to remember mm-hmm. that and be like, you know what? Yeah, maybe I do. And you know, that's a good point and kind of like what I said. I mean, it's not all on Kyrie. I mean, obviously, his existence on the team itself, I think, doesn't do well for certain situations. And we kind of worried about this because, you know, Luka is that alpha guy. And this is not new for him to have a bit of an attitude. You know, that's always been kind of his thing. Like, you know, you know what I mean? It's not just because of mm-hmm. Kyrie showing up. It just maybe that enhanced it a little bit and certainly led to a bit of a lack of focus, so to speak. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this Mavericks team is going to go through a lot of questions this off season, and certainly the future of both those players with that club, I don't know. I couldn't tell you right now, and it's disappointing because, like I said, on the flip side, you look over at Phoenix and. Well, guess what? Like I said, they just don't lose games with Kevin Durant in the lineup.
No. They've got a top first-round matchup against the Clippers, but I think they'll find a way to win because Paul George most likely will miss that series for the Clippers. But, yeah, the interesting thing about Luka Doncic, I think he's as talented as any player in the league, maybe more so in terms of pure skill at the offensive end. He's been a pro since he's been 15. So we talk about the AAU culture. Well, being a pro since you're 15 is even more complicated than being a star at the AAU level, right? So now he just figures that he can get his way, that everyone has to kind of play around him. And again, he's a ball dominant player who needs more spot up shooters rather than another ball dominant superstar in the lineup. I mean, when the trade was made, it's like at its highest level, this may be beautiful basketball, but there's going to be a lot of ugliness as well. And that's what we've seen. I mean, they went from the fourth seed to outside the play-in tournament, which is pretty startling in a 2 month period. But, a lot of decisions have to be made there. Again, I think what you normally do in this situation is let cooler heads prevail, and then you address it going forward that this is still your franchise player.
Yeah, you don't want to make these decisions immediately after the season because, again, mm-hmm. a lot of motion will be involved. But anyway, speaking of play-in, your guy LeBron, who crowned himself yesterday, again, just endearing himself to his fringe fans, I'm sure, you know, putting that crown on his own head. It's very LeBron-like. Just when you think, like, okay, all right, you know. See, this is, again, and you understand this. This is why a lot of people just kind of roll their eyes at him, you know. Like, dude, really? Really? You scratched and clawed to get into the play-in tournament. Good for you, LeBron. That's not put a crown on your head worthy. All right, let's pump the brakes a little bit. I thought that was funny. But you know, hey, good for them. You know, it'll be fun to see the Lakers get in, I guess, and then maybe make a little bit of noise. Hey, all you got to do is win one, and then you're in the, you know, you get your chance. So,
You get to face the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Who are imploding in front of our eyes, apparently, because, well, Rudy Gobert and what's-his-face McDaniels apparently suffered a broken hand after he took a swipe. He very Kevin Brown of him, if anyone gets that reference, early 2000 oh, yeah. Yankees pitcher. Very, very famously punched a wall and was very predictable in him injuring himself that season. But
wall undefeated at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see, the only wall that actually might have lost was the one that was holding the phone box that David Ortiz obliterated right, yeah. with a baseball bat. So, but yeah, they get to take on the Minnesota Timberwolves, who, again, based on what we saw last night, it's not looking pretty good in Wolf Country. I don't know if that's what they call themselves up there, but
I like that. That's
yeah, you like
good
that?
One.
You like it? It's good. It's
yeah,
good.
Wolf Country.
Yeah, that might be taken by something else, but whatever. We'll consider me the first person to ever think of that and give me credit for it. So, anyways, that's going to do it for us here today. We will be back tomorrow, and again, we're greatly anticipating the trade of Aaron Rodgers, which should hopefully be coming down anytime soon. Maybe we get a little bit more news on Lamar Jackson, and perhaps with Odell Beckham Jr. out of the free agent mix, DeAndre Hopkins might enter it, as he may eventually get cut as opposed to traded. So we're going to talk about all that stuff, you know, throughout the weeks, throughout the months, however long it takes. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll see you tomorrow.